and grateful to Ari for figuring out the logistics of how we could do a hybrid shiur. So shalom aleichem to all those here in person. Shalom aleichem to all those who are joining us via Zoom. So this week is Parshas Bereishis, and we come around. There's so many ideas on our heads as we emerge from Yom Tov into the normal cycle of the Parshas. A lot of things to think about if we're honest about our avoda. If we're honest about with ourselves, I think one of the sometimes lesser thought about or lesser focused pieces, one of the more puzzling aspects, if we're honest with ourselves, is you open up Parshas Bereishis, and what do we make of Parshas Bereishis? The Psukim talk about 6 days of Bria, and over the course of less than a week, HaKadosh Baruch Hu takes universe from non-existent to final form, complete with human beings with a neshama who are already engaged in Nisyonos and Chet and leaving Gan Eden. A lot happens over the course of those 6 days. And then you open any work of science published in the last couple of decades at least, and you hear that the universe is not 6,000 years old, but 15 billion years old. That's a lot of zeros. That's a good six orders of magnitude or so of difference. It's around 1 to 1 million. And dinosaurs existed and walked the earth millions of years ago. You look in the Chumash, it sounds like there was no millions of years ago. So if we're going to be honest with ourselves, the opening psukim of Chumash Bereishis are among the more puzzling passages in Chumash. And kids are honest. And kids will ask this question, and they do ask. And it comes up in various ways. It comes up in different contexts. It might be just you're talking about the part with, you know, talking around the table about the parsha, and the kid's like, well, how about, what do you mean 6 days? What do you mean 6,000 years ago? Or maybe my Rebbe said this, my Mora said this. Or maybe it's as simple as a book about dinosaurs or a dinosaur toy. And you're not 100% sure how to frame that. And it could be something as innocent. Oh, so when were dinosaurs? So what do you say? It will come up different ages. It will come up in different ways. And a lot of times that question sort of will hit us, sort of blindside us. Not really sure what to say. I think it's great. I think asking questions in general is great for adults and for children. Anyone who has learned even a little bit of Gemara knows that Jews are very into asking questions. Our Masorah is very into asking questions. And this question, I think in particular, is great. And we should be equipped to respond in a substantive and comfortable way. And I'm actually, in a sense, more interested in talking tonight, not even so much about content, although we will talk about content also, specific approaches to the age of the universe in the context of Bereishis. But even more than content, I'm actually interested in sort of the larger questions and the how you talk about it, because I think we all should be even more interested in the how. And let's begin, so a couple of meta points about questions about how, sort of what goes into responding to a question like this before we get into the details of different approaches to Masa Bereishis. So sort of maybe the largest question is, and the largest point rather, is that this is something that we should cherish, and this is something that we should welcome. Because it should really be in the context, the general context of talking about HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that's something that's important for us to be proactive about. The Rambam writes in the end of the Pirsha Mishnah, Yisam HaSachas Brachas, and he writes about this other places also, that he loved teaching Amunah. In the context of writing the Pirsha on the last paragraph of Brachas, so there's a theme that comes up, the Rambam, the Hashkafa theme, and the Rambam starts talking about it at great length. Usually the Pirush Mishnayos is very brief. He write a few lines in each Mishnah. Here he goes on for a whole paragraph or two. And then at the end he says, I know I've been more lengthy than I usually am, But any opportunity I have to teach Emunah, I'll always take that opportunity. Talking about HaKadosh Baruch Hu and talking about Emunah is something we should be seeking to do. We believe in an invisible God, and that's hard to convey to children. And we should be, and it's hard for us, if we're honest. We believe in our heads, but to really feel it in the kishkas, to have not just an Emunah sichlis in the seichel, but Emunah chushis, that we feel that Emunah, that's something that takes work and that requires cultivation. Revolba talks in his kuntres on chinuch. He speaks about the value of a parent, you know, closing your eye and you're saying a bracha, actually say the bracha, as though you're speaking to someone, because you are. You're speaking to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Baruch Ata Hashem, and speaking to you, God. And Revolba writes, so imagine if a parent, you're about to say a bracha, you close your eyes and you speak to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And your kids would understand from a very young age that there's someone that you're speaking to, even though you can't see that someone. Rav Chorsky has reminded Talmidim over the years about the importance of bringing HaKadosh Baruch Hu into conversation. Rav Volba talks about speaking to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, reminding ourselves and making it clear to our children that when we say brachas, we're speaking to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Rav Chorsky has focused on the importance of talking to our kids. Make sure that the conversation is about the Ribbono Shel Olam. You know, not only sort of in the bigger, having conversations about HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but even just in the course of talking about whatever it might be, talking about events, what happened, what's going to happen, you could phrase the same thing with or without Ribbono Shel Olam. You could say, here's what happened. You could say, HaKadosh Baruch Hu was good to me, and X, Y, Z happened. And we might believe, we believe it either way, but do we articulate? So once again, so the first point, I think the first really critical meta point is to value talking about Emunah. I was saying before, the Rambam loved it, and he tells us Beferish at the end of Pirush Mishnayos and Brachos, where he's Mishnah after Mishnah, the halachic Mishnayos, he's very terse. And then he has a long paragraphs about, at the end of Mishnayos Brachos, about a hashkafa topic. And then he says at the end, I'm really sorry that I spent so much time on this. It was a little uncharacteristically long, but whenever there's a chance to teach Emunah, I will always teach. I'll always seize that opportunity to teach Emunah. That's important for us. Rama there was talking to adults, and it's important for kids too. And as I was saying before, you know, Rav Volba and Rabbi Chorsky, I think that's where we left off at when we had our technical fallout here. Rav Volba in Zuria Ubinyan Bechinuch, Rav Volba, the kuntres for Rav Volba on raising children and raising oneself. So he speaks there about the value, how you're going to convey to children, we believe in an invisible God. We can't see, and we can't directly see, we can't directly touch, we can't directly sense HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So how are we going to convey that? So Rav Volba speaks about saying brachas like you mean it. Saying brachas like you're actually speaking to someone. And if a parent closes his or her eyes and says brachas with intent, but with eyes closed, so it becomes clear to kids that there's someone invisible who is worth talking to. Rabbi Chorsky, as I mentioned before, reminds Talmidim to speak about HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So Chorsky reminds Talmidim of the importance of talking about HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They're talking about, you know, things that happen in your day. It could be, here's what happened, or it could be HaKadosh Baruch Hu took care of me, and here's how HaKadosh Baruch Hu took care of me. Talk about what's going to happen tomorrow. If the Emir Hashem is real, and often in English, HaKadosh Baruch Hu can just be a part of the conversation. HaKadosh Baruch Hu can just be a part of the conversation. In addition to having conversations about the Ribbono Shel Olam, that is the mitzvah of Yiras Hashem. The mitzvah of Yiras Hashem at its core, this is on the first page of Shulchan Aruch, the opening Raman, Aruch Haim, is the mitzvah, is what the Ramchal speaks about, and the end of the introduction to Mesilas Yesharim, based on the Ramban Mor Nevuchim, the fundamental mitzvah of Yiras Hashem at its core, not to be afraid of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but to be aware, to have a God consciousness. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is a reality in my life. Not just, you know, if you ask me, I'll say, yes, I believe in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But the Ribbono Shel Olam is a reality in my life. That's a long-term goal. But that happens in large part by thinking and talking and conversing about HaKadosh Baruch Hu. HaKadosh, you know, it's true that it's something sometimes that, you know, Rebbeim have to work on in the classroom. It's something that parents have to work on in the home classroom. It's one thing that in the public school classroom, there's debate about whether or not God belongs in the public school classroom. We're not getting into politics now or into constitutional issues. But certainly in a yeshiva classroom and certainly in our homes, HaKadosh Baruch Hu shouldn't be absent. When we talk about halacha, it's not just I have to do this, I can't do this. It's HaKadosh Baruch Hu expects of me to do this. HaKadosh Baruch Hu expects of me to avoid that. It's a game changer. It's subtle, and it's a game changer. So that's sort of the meta point number one. We should be cultivating a larger context of conversations about the Ribbono Shel Olam. In little ways, in big ways, again, bringing HaKadosh Baruch Hu into the way we phrase other things and talking about HaKadosh Baruch Hu directly, loudly and proudly. Seeking to understand things in the context of the Ribbono Shel Olam. So the more there's that general context of conversations about HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so the more this becomes sort of a natural extension of that. And in general, I think it's very important to feel, like I was saying before, to feel comfortable with questions. You don't have to learn that much Gemara to notice that we are pro-questions. And you don't need to have all the answers. We believe that our religion is a religion of truth. So we're comfortable asking questions. We're comfortable trying to figure things out. Rabbi Schechter likes to tell that when one of the times that the cardinals came to visit YU, they were apparently seeking to understand how the Chavrusa system worked so that they could introduce it into their seminaries. And they came to the Beis Medrash. They came to a couple of Batei Medrash of various stripes. And when they came to YU Beis Medrash, so they were taken aback by a noisy Beis Medrash, and guys are arguing with each other and walking around trying to figure out, whoa, what are you doing? So one of the fellows in Yeshiva explained, you know, we're reading a text, and I understand it one way, and my study partner understands it another way, and I'm telling him I think he's wrong. And he's explaining to me why he thinks I'm wrong. We're debating, and I'm raising questions, and the Talmud itself raises questions, and we're raising more questions. And apparently one of the cardinals blurted out, so, ooh, wow, like in our religion, we're not allowed to ask any questions. So we're comfortable with questions, and we wouldn't expect to have all the answers. As Yeshayahu reminds us every single Tana Sibur, Lo Machshav Osai Machshav Osechem Lo Darchechem Drachai. Kadosh Baruch Hu is an infinite creator and we're finite creatures, so we wouldn't expect to fully understand the Ribbono Shel Olam. But at the same time, there's value in seeking to understand as much as we can. So we should welcome questions. We should welcome opportunities to talk more about Amunah and seek to understand more about Kadosh Baruch Hu. If they don't have the answer, that's totally fine. And that's a great question. Let's find out. Let's research. Let's talk to someone else. And let's figure it out. In responding to questions, it's also, in addition to sort of the general context of Emunah and the general context of speaking about HaKadosh Baruch Hu explicitly and just the comfort with questions, two more points I think are very important to keep in mind. And they go together. One is to make sure that you're speaking to a child at his or her level. And the other is to sort of see beyond what the surface question is. I say to make sure to speak to a child at his or her level, his or her age. You know, the Gemara says, based on the Pasuk in the Treyasar, that the Rebbe is supposed to be domel amal sham tzvakos. The Rebbe is supposed to choose a Rebbe who is angelic, who's like an angel. So what does that mean? So you usually assume that means that the Rebbe is a Yare Shammai and the Rebbe is a Balmidos, someone who's a very intellectually impressive, but is arrogant or has other Midos Raos. He may know a lot, but he's not the Rebbe for me. Shechter likes to quote from Pinchas Halevi, that author of the Sefer HaMakna, the Sefer HaFla, brother of Shmuel of Nicholsburg, who's one of the Talmidim in the Maggid of Mezrich, and he later became a Rav in Germany. Interesting. Rare combination. There's a story behind that. We don't have time for that story right now. So the Hafla writes in the Hagdama to one of his Svarim, a different approach to what does it mean the Rebbe has to be angelic? The Rebbe should be Dom Lach Sham Tzvakos. Not only that a Rebbe should be a person of extraordinary, sterling character and midos and so forth, but also a Malach is fixed. A human being grows, hopefully, from year to year, from day to day, from year to year, to decade to decade, decade to decade. A human being is dynamic. A malach is stationary. So the Hafla said that a Rebbe has to be stationary in the sense that the Rebbe may be a greater Talmud Chacham from 1 year to the next. But if I'm teaching sixth grade every year, the fact that now the Rebbe learned another Masechta, that doesn't change how he's relating to the Talmidim. If Talmidim are still in sixth grade, you have to make sure to meet kids where they're at. So it's important, you know, to offer kids the degree of sophistication that's right for them. We'll talk in a few minutes about some pretty sophisticated ideas. And this is not just going to be true for questions of the age of the universe. It'll be true for other emunah questions. It'll be true for other questions of life. You want to make sure that you're not dumbing down, but you're also not overloading an eight-year-old with more than he's ready for. And we'll give some examples of that soon. At the same time, it's also important to figure out like what the shoresh of the question is. Sometimes kids are really bothered by the dinosaur, and sometimes it's really something else that they're asking. So you always want to, you should be excited about questions. You should be excited for opportunities to talk about emunah. At the same time, you want to listen carefully to what your child's actually asking and think about who your audience is when you craft the answer. The right amount of sophistication and to make sure I'm actually answering the question they're asking. So I want to make sure you understand their question. It's true for communication in general and so in this context, to make sure that you understand what your child wants to know before you give your machshavah shir. So with those meta points about sort of the type of conversations you want to have and the way to handle them, I'm glad to take your questions before we jump into content. Okay. If there are no questions. Yeah, Corey? No. Okay. So as I said before, we would welcome an opportunity for Limud HaEmunah. We would welcome an opportunity for talking about the Ribbono Shel Olam and sort of exploring together. Let me put up on the screen for those who are zooming a sheet of Maror Mekumos. We'll take a look at some of these. If you're here live, there are Maror Mekumos here. Feel free to help yourself. It's important in getting into inquiry. One of you could maybe call this sort of the crossover from content, from sort of the meta, the larger picture into content, is a healthy balanced approach to questions, a healthy balanced approach to inquiry, introduction to inquiry, asking questions about emunah. I think it's important to ground it in the following way. Take a look at a pasuk in Divrei Hayamim. This is among David HaMelech's final words, and the way they're recorded in Sefer Divrei Hayamim. He says to Shlomo, "Ata Shlomo b'ni, das Elokei Avicha, avdehu b'leiv shalem uvenefesh chafetza." So Shlomo, my son, Shlomo, as we know, has an extraordinary, an exceptional intellect, chacham mikal adam. So Shlomo, David says to Shlomo, "Das Elokei Avicha, I want you to know the God of your father." And avdehu b'leiv shalem uvenefesh chafetza. With that recipe, to know the God of your father, you'll be prepared, you'll be equipped to worship HaKadosh Baruch Hu wholeheartedly. B'leiv shalem uvenefesh chafetza. That's the foundation for real excitement and real depth in your avos Hashem. So what does that phrase mean? Das elkei avicham. So a number of Mefarshim here, the Radak and Metzuas David on location, as well as the Rebbeinu Bechai and Pakuda in the Chovos HaLevavos, in the Shar HaYichud, so they all say that Das Elokei Avicha means to know. Many Rishonim read the word Yidia as exploring, as seeking to understand the Kadosh Baruch Hu, asking questions, engaging in inquiry, really seeking to figure things out, asking honest questions. What they refer to as chakira, not in the lamdisha sense of a lamdisha chakira, but chakira, philosophical inquiry, to ask honest questions that bother you. He says, but the yidia has to be rooted in Elokei Avicha. The foundation is tradition. The foundation is I have a masorah. that nation is on par of a nation that has a Masorah. And in other words, they have the intellectual humility, going back to a point we made before, we're finite creatures of an infinite creator, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu blessed us with fine minds. HaKadosh Baruch Hu expects us to use those minds to understand Him. At the same time, we're not so arrogant as to think that we understand everything there is to know. We're not so arrogant as to think that if I don't get it, it automatically, ipso facto, must be false. We have the intellectual humility to realize I can understand a lot, and there will also be things that are beyond me. So if I have that sort of balanced, humble, and realistic approach, so then I can say, I can accept, this is Elokei Avi, this is the God of my father, this is the God of Klal Yisrael, this is the God of Masorah, and then with that basis, let me seek to understand as much as possible. Let me seek to not suffice with just an Emunah Pshuta, but let me seek to dig deep and to make sense of it. But that balance of beginning with Elokei Avicha, beginning with here's what I believe, and then let me seek to understand as much as I can, as much as I finitely can, that balance is, I think, a very healthy place for us to be, and that gives us the comfort I was talking about before. Yeah, so great, so let's hear your questions. I'd love to hear your questions. And the comfort in hearing, in fielding questions, as I said before, we may not have all the answers. We wouldn't expect to have all the answers up front, and that's fine. That's great. We're not scared of questions. As much as Rashi quotes, that Rashi al-Torah quotes, Moshe Rabbeinu responds that Jews ask about can we send Meraglim? And Moshe says, sure, I have nothing to hide. And Moshe expected, once he said I have nothing to hide, they'd be like, okay, then we need to send Meraglim. If you're comfortable, then let's go get him. They didn't take that approach. But that, having that sort of comfort, sure, I'd love to discuss your questions. I may have the answers, I may not, but I have confidence that Torah is true, and we seek to understand as much as we can, and I want to invite you, my child, to join me in this journey, in membership in believing HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and membership in seeking the part of the journey of Klal Yisrael, of seeking to understand our Emunah as much as possible. So I think that's a very important basis for us, a very good place for us to be for our own Emunah, and this sort of groundedness and this sort of healthy, balanced approach to inquiry, I think, equips us and positions us to be able to field our children's questions, which should be happy, Mir Hashem, for many, many years as kids grow up, and yet each kid has a different bent of mind, a different personality, and kids, every person, every individual child will change and morph over time, and it's an ongoing journey for us and our children together. Now let's talk about, there's a lot to say about science in general, but right now I really want to focus on our specific topic, which is specifically a specific Torah and science conflict, which is the age of the universe. On the second side of the Maamar Makomos, we're not going to focus on that tonight. Second side of Maamar Makomos, or some Maamar Makomos about did Chazal believe in scientists? Sometimes people think of this has come up, obviously, in very lamasa ways over the last couple of months. Sometimes there's this sort of spoken or unspoken assumption that Chazal didn't actually do scientists. So that is demonstrably false. If you're interested, I can we can share the Maamar Makomos by the Zoom chat as well. The second side of the Maamar Makomos, so there are the Gemara, Braisa, Nida, and Vilna Gaon, Hilchos Mikvos, and there are loads of Maamar Makomos. It's clear that Chazal valued the scientists of their era, who were not uniquely holy, not necessarily asking that the Tanaim were uniquely holy, but the Jewish or non-Jewish scientists were their contemporaries. They were the contemporary scientists, and we have our contemporary scientists. So certainly, Chazal valued science, and so should we. But in terms of the question specifically, of how do you make sense of 15 billion years, 6,000 years? Dinosaurs existed millions of years ago, or there was no millions of years ago? How are we supposed to handle that? And again, with children, with adults, often the most pressing question is the age of the universe and the 15 billion versus 6,000. With kids, I think it comes up more. The kids aren't necessarily so taken by the Big Bang. They are very taken by dinosaurs. Whether it's the book or the toy or whatever else it may, whatever the medium it may be, you know, the dinosaurs are often a point of fascination. So what I want to share with you over the next couple of minutes is three different approaches that I think are all authentic from a Torah perspective and intellectually satisfying. Three different approaches to thinking about what appears to be an intractable stira between 15 billion and 6,000. And before we jump into the details, I would want to, though, circle back to what I said before. And here's an example that I had promised. I mentioned before that when you're answering, responding to kids' questions, it's always important to think about what they really want to know and where they're at and sort of speaking to their level. So we're going to talk in a couple of moments about three different approaches to be miyashev the stira. And one is rooted in a Gemara in Chul, another one is rooted in a Gemara in Chagiga, and there's a Ramban, and so on and so forth. So sometimes, younger kids, you're not going to give all the detail they're about to get into. You could say, and I have said this myself to different kids at different points, did dinosaurs actually exist? It's a machlokas tamei chacham. Period. For some kids, that's the perfect answer. It's the perfect length, the perfect answer. Sometimes chacham would say yes, sometimes chacham would say no. And that's very consistent with the way we approach loads of other things. That we can, on our fingers, easily count, many, probably tens of machloksin, well-known machloksin, different issues of hashkafa, and we could easily enumerate hundreds, if not thousands, of machloksin in the area of halacha. We're very comfortable with the fact that many things are multiple machlokas. If your kids ask about tefillin chol moed, right, that's a very neutral topic, not a hot button issue at all, at least not for us. Different place, a different time, it was a very hot button issue. But in Burnfield in 2020, some people wear it to the whole morning and some people don't. And what is it? Machlokas Rishon, Machlokas Tamir Chachamim. So some follow this psak, some follow that psak, and this is the way it is. It's fine. So again, if a child is more sophisticated, you may want to share with them some of the back and forth. At a certain age, you may talk about, Os is Chol Moed and Os. Kids even more sophisticated may share with them Avnei Nezer and a Gemara, three Machlokas, Tanan and Bechoros. Or you may just say to a child who either isn't as sophisticated or isn't as interested, it's Machlokas. There are different positions of how to read the Gemara, different positions of Rishonim. So some people follow this Rav and some follow that Rav. And that's for many kids, that's an absolutely... It's totally, all those answers are totally accurate, and that last answer may be entirely sufficient. Either that it fits their age and their sophistication, or they may be capable of more, but they're not interested in more. That's totally fine. You have to know who you're speaking to and what they want to hear. So that's true here as well. The answer could just be, the different Gemaras indicate different ways. It's a machlokas. Or the kids may actually want to know more, in which case we can get into more. Yeah, Avi, question. Machlokas in Metzias or Machlokas in Hashkafa? I'll give you another example of Machlokas in Hashkafa that some kids, usually a little older, will ask about. Gilgulim. Right? Do Neshamas come back? So that's not as popular as it used to be, but definitely our kids will ask about it. The answer is, I don't know, it's Machlokas Rishonim. Rambam held no. Rabban held yes. So Machlokas. Maybe is, maybe not. We'll find out. Machlokas and Metzias. Right. Machlokas and Metzias. There are other examples of, often yeshivas have been raised to believe there's no such thing as Machlokas and Metzias. What that really means is there's no such thing, it's inappropriate for Chazal to argue about something that's directly verifiable. Don't philosophize if you can experiment. So if we're going to, it doesn't make sense to say, Machlokas is something we could just take a look, see what the facts are. But let's say there is a machlokas hatanaim in Maseches Yuma whether the aron, we know there was no aron in the second base on Mikdash. The Kohen Gadol walked into to Kodesh HaKadosh, there was no aron there. But where did it go? Machlokas hatanaim, is it buried in the basement or was it captured by Nebuchadnezzar? Machlokas in Metzias, sure. But the answer is that's a legitimate machlokes metzias because there's no way to directly verify. So if you can verify, it's legit. So here too, we can't go back. We haven't yet invented a time machine. We can go back a million years and see, do we exist or not? So it's a legitimate machlokes. Let's speak.
It's not the same thing, obviously. Over here, we're generally trained that you believe what scientists say. Okay, this is obviously a broad cloud.
Yeah, that is true. This is a more sophisticated question in that there is, well, you're asking that it's Masora versus sense perception. You know, there isn't direct sense perception either, but it is true that it seems to be Masora versus science. So I want to sketch out three basic approaches. There's more to say about the details, and I would be glad to get into greater detail in a different year. Let's say in the broadest of ways, there seem to be three basic approaches. One approach is to read the science kipshuto. A second approach is to read Bereshit's kipshuto. And a third approach is to read both kipshuto. To read just the science kipshuto, that will be based on what you see here, Mishnah Chagiga and Ramban in this week's parsha. Ramban, the first pasuk in Chumash, and the sixth pasuk in Chumash. Mishnah Chagiga is talking about, beginning the second paragraph, talks about various areas of Kabbalah. One of them is Maaseh Merkava, which is the opening paragraph of Yechezkel about Malachim Kisya Kavod, and the other is Maaseh Breishis, which at first strikes us as, well, Maaseh Breishis isn't so surprising. Ramban says Maaseh Breishis is Kabbalah. And Ramban says that many of the details in the opening prakim, parak or prakim, are not understandable kipshuta. That's what Ramban appears to say several times in the beginning of Bereshit. So you may say that the scientists are discussing the what, the psukim are describing the why, and this is a metaphor for some deeper mysticism. I want to be sensitive to time. So let me point you to a second approach, and we'll close with this, which is that Rabbi Monk of Paris and many other Talmid Chachamim suggested that the 6 days, the days may refer to chunks of time. And up until Adam is on the scene, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is using a different reference frame for describing time. And then, in fact, Gerald Schroeder, Nathan Aviezer, a number of Frum professors suggest the amount of time is different, but the flow of events that are described in Bereishis, the first paragraph, actually corresponds remarkably well to the flow of events that scientists have found through independent inquiry. And I would close with the following point, and then we'll go to Maariv, which is a point that Gerald Schroeder makes. So you got to work on the details, but it's important to recognize that the core idea of the Big Bang is science for the first time in millennia coming around to recognize the notion of the first pasuk in Bereishis, that the universe had a beginning, and that some force outside of nature started the universe. That is exactly a recognition that Bereishis bara Elokim es hashamayim es haaretz. Hopefully this was helpful. I'd be glad to continue the conversation.